Dear all, today at ETA FM we have a pleasure of talking to Charles Baker, the CEO of DCT Gdansk, which used to be the name that everybody knew, and now we have a new name, being the Baltic Hub. Hello, Charles.
Hi, Dominic. Yes, thank you very much for that. I hope we haven't confused everybody too much with our name change.
Well, I think, you know, DCT Gdansk is known very well to the market, and now is the recent change. I think it will take some time for people to adjust. But, you know, before we go into that, Charles, you know, what I've learned from you is that actually you had a very long history in maritime business. So how did it all start with you?
How did it all start? I grew up in a very small town in the southeast corner of England called Felixstowe, which most people in our industry know because there's a port there. And if you say it to anybody who's not in our industry, they have never heard of it. So if I decided to stay in my hometown, there was one choice, really, and that was the shipping, ports, transportation industry, along with all of my school friends as well, I suppose. So I did start working for CP Ships, Canada Maritime, as it was called in those days, with their service from North Europe over to Montreal. And then the company I worked for, they also were representing K-Line in the time. And then K-Line decided to start their own agency, so I transferred across with that agency business. And then after a couple of years there, I thought I'd like to earn a bit more money, actually, just to be perfectly honest about it. And the port was paying reasonably well for ship planners. And I thought that sounds like a nice job as well. So I started as a ship planner for the port of Felixstowe, which is owned and was owned at the time by Hutchison. So then I spent 15 years working for Hutchison, and because of globalization and maybe a bit of hard work and dedication and being prepared to do a bit of sacrifice, I moved around a little bit with them, including in Brazil and in Spain. And then I joined APM Terminals for a couple of years in their head office in The Hague, and then went back down to Spain for an investment fund that was making an acquisition of several terminals and shipping agency transportation businesses, which we rebranded as well. So I have done this once before and been lucky enough that the shareholders let me do it once more. But I think, Dominic, that was already with your Baltic Hub name that was floating around anyway, so I can't take too much credit for it. And then I joined PSA and went to Cuba for several years because we did a greenfield terminal there with the Cuban government. And then the company said, would you like to move to Gdansk and take up the challenge of replacing Cameron Thorpe as the CEO here nearly 18 months ago? And I jumped at the chance. I thought it was a great place when I had a chance to visit once before. And despite the snow falling outside compared to a Caribbean winter, which is quite considerably milder, it's a lovely place to live. So, and as you know, it's a very exciting and dynamic region for the business. So it's very nice. I'm very happy that I had those opportunities.
Well, so you joined Poland with our beautiful golden sand beaches known worldwide, and definitely this was the key to the decision. But seriously, talking, I think DCT Gdansk is the place to be, right? I mean, now the Baltic Hub. So when you were in Cuba, I guess, have you heard anything about at that point of time DCT Gdansk? I mean, and this part of the world was something that you would imagine working in?
I never imagined working here. But yes, I followed DCT Gdansk from the time that it was being designed, because my father, back in the 1970s, worked at the Port of Felixstowe long before I did. And he had two colleagues called Robin McLeod and Derek Peters. And they were, I would say, part of the founding team of DCT Gdansk back in probably 2005, when it was all on paper at the time. And I worked, well, I knew them since I was a little boy. And we went on family holidays together with the Peters family. And I once as well worked for Robin when he was the managing director of Thamesport, which was another port that was set up to compete against Felixstowe at some stage. So we've known each other for all of my life. And again, I just never imagined that I would be in Gdansk, following to some extent in their footsteps. But I have to say that I am in contact with them today. They're now both in their 80s. I hope they wouldn't mind me saying, if they heard this podcast, and still very, very interested to see how their baby, let's say, is doing, and happy to say that, oh, there's a Felix Doe boy who's over there now trying to take care of their baby. So I have followed the history, and it's a very exciting one, right? I mean, it's wonderful to see how Poland has developed, especially, let's say, since joining the European Union, and continues to develop, and the plans that we've got for future development.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Baltic Hub is now 15 years, right? There was an anniversary of 15 years of existence of the terminal that was built actually on, as the city legend says, it was a nudist beach. Although I'm not really sure whether this is true or not, but I think you are in better position to comment. But it was 15 years now.
Well, no one's nude today. Eh? I think with these temperatures, you'd have to be pretty crazy to be nude today. But yes, I have heard the same story. But yeah, and October last year was the 15th anniversary of the first operations, I think. So there's quite a history. And the growth and where they've come to in the 15 years is remarkable, because I think it was correct to say that Gdansk as a port in terms of container volumes was ranked more than 60. So way, way, way yes. from there. In Europe at the time. And I haven't seen the statistics for last year. I don't know whether you have, but I suspect we're probably around 12 or 13 now. And of course, with the volume decline in St. Petersburg last year due to the sanctions against Russia, we are firmly cemented as the top port in the Baltic.
I think you've overtaken the St. Petersburg combined volumes for all terminals already some time ago. So I think this situation now can only improve. But then 15 years, I mean, I recall the first discussions we had in the maritime industry in Poland, that this, you know, this is going to be a white elephant. Why do we need deep water berth? These vessels will never come. And actually, the history of Baltic Hub proves otherwise. I mean, I think it changed the logistical pattern in the Central East Europe, right?
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, and all due credit must go to Maersk Line, as well as the DCT management from that time, to be brave enough to establish the first direct call for mainline vessels and deep sea vessels into the Baltic, and to stick with it, which they have obviously done now for more than a decade. And we hope they will do for another decade. So, and of course, that has subsequently dragged other players in as well, as they've seen how successful Maersk Line, as it was then known, has been to develop those calls and to develop the market for themselves, both to the Far East and to obviously all of the other destinations that Maersk Network serves.
Yes, that's very much true. I mean, when Maersk started the service, it was called A10. And today, in 2023, the service is still called A10, which then means that the only thing that changed was the volumes and also the size of the vessels, because initially it was, I think, 8,000 TEU vessels. Then they changed to Emma Maersk class, then Mini PS, 13.5. And now, if I'm not mistaken, you are serving the Triple E's or even Triple E's Generation 2.
Yes, that's right. It's amazing when you think that the 8,400 TUS class, we were all looking at that probably 10 or so years ago thinking, or more than that now, I suppose 15 years ago thinking, wow, that's a huge vessel. You know, I remember planning ships at the port of Felixstowe when the Hyundai Federal was first launched, and she was just over 6,000 TU. And we had to redevelop the ship planning system to put the ability for more rows and higher stacks on it, because people just never imagined that ships would get so big. And yet, yes, there we are with 20 and 24,000 TU vessels plying the trades, and obviously quite a lot of them on the slate for being launched in 2023, 24, 25 and onwards. So clearly the shipping lines continue to see volume growth on those main trade routes, and certainly we need to make sure that we've got the capacity and the facilities to handle them and to support that growth in the future.
Well, on that, in the last 15 years, I mean, DCT, that used to be called DCT, now it's Baltic Hub again, for our audience, has seen the largest vessels afloat coming in their maiden voyages to Baltic Hub. Now you are serving the largest exchanges, if I'm not mistaken, in Europe. Is it correct?
I think there's quite a bit of competition these days for that. I know in Felixstowe there's one or two services that edge with us, and likewise in Antwerp. But certainly we're up there, and I think it's also fair to say that our exchanges on the AE10, as Maersk calls it, Silk obviously for MSC, and the Ocean Alliance string that we handle are very consistent. So they're around about the 10,000 move mark on a weekly basis, week in, week out throughout the year. And that's something that's very much to be proud of for the team here, and the great job that they're doing delivering consistent productivity week in, week out as well.
You touched upon a very interesting subject, because the vessels are growing larger. The infrastructure also has to grow in order to be able to operate these monsters. Beautiful ships. Still, they are huge, 400 meters in length. So when you see these beauties coming over, I mean, this must create some sort of additional, I would say, a challenge for any terminal operator to serve them, right? I mean, they grow in size, the exchanges grow. So DCT seems to be, or Baltic Hub seems to be, very efficient when you look at the turnaround of the vessels that are calling your port.
Yes, I think we are. I mean, we don't ever want to be complacent about that, and we always looking to see how we can improve our levels of efficiency. But I think we've got to the stage where those improvements are, you know, very much just small improvements, working together with the shipping lines to see how we can help one another in terms of information flow and what have you. But certainly, Baltic Hub's performance ranks up there with the top around Europe. And that's something that we're proud of, and we want to make sure that we stay that way.
So you say it takes two to tango, or sometimes even more, in order to improve the efficiencies. But recently we've heard about the long-expected, I'm not really sure, would we say divorce of MSC and Maersk within 2M Alliance? How would you see that? I mean, would it have any effect on DCT Gdansk Baltic Hub for future? I mean, do you think that the alliances will reshape, or would they stay as they are?
Yes, I mean, that's the big news, I think, of the year so far, isn't it? But having come through COVID and the Ukraine-Russia war, I hope, or let's say there could be some other big developments still to come in 2023. So I'm not going to get too excited about one big piece of news. But yeah, it's certainly with the change of CEO at the Maersk Group, they've started the year off with a bang, haven't they? And the two and partners have obviously both announced that there'll be a change to their relationship, whether it's a separation, a divorce, you know, and who gets custody of their children, I think are still unknowns for all parties. But we've also seen them drop the CELO, announced that they'll drop the Sealand and Hamburg Sudbrands, which I'm sure that many of us will be slightly nostalgic about for lots of good reasons. At the same time, it's clearly aligned with the strategy that the Maersk Group have been deploying in the last few years to become that end-to-end logistics provider for the container transport. And to some extent, you can see that there are strategic differences between those two parties. So it's going to be very interesting to watch it play out.
I think the industry was looking at Ave in 2015. I think it was February when the announcement of 2M was public. Baltic Hub started to operate the MSC and Maersk joint service at that point of time. I think it was A10 for Maersk and the Silk for MSC. Do you see any? I would say dangers or any sort of a question mark now that they've decided that they would split apart. I think it was beginning of 2024, so it's well in, you know, you still have a lot of time to think it over and to prepare. But do you see any danger on this or maybe chances?
Yeah, I think there's probably both, Dominic. You know, the shipping lines will obviously have their own ideas, what they would like to do with the services going forwards. It could be that they continue to collaborate with one another in some sort of vessel sharing agreement, and obviously not so dependent upon reaching a mutual agreement on where those vessels go and what size vessels they are, et cetera, et cetera. That would be more of a status quo outcome, I guess. If they did decide to go completely their own ways, then we would need to have a serious conversation with our friends in Geneva about why they should maintain a direct service, which they don't operate today, obviously, because they're all Maersk vessels on the AE10. But why they would maintain a deep sea service directly into Baltic Hub. And of course, at the moment, the MSC volumes are split between BCT and Gdynia and Baltic Hub. So there are, let's say, dangers potentially, opportunities, I hope, in the future as well. We're building, as you know, the Terminal 3. So we'll have additional 1.5 million TU of capacity sometime late into 2024. So we will have capacity for additional deep water services. And of course, we shouldn't forget that the Alliance does not currently have a direct service into the Baltic. Partially, I'm sure that's to do with the lack of available vessels, but that's going to change as they continue to launch new vessels over the coming 24 to 36 months. And of course, partly it's because there is nowhere to berth any of those vessels until T3 is open in Poland. So there are plenty of opportunities, and I'm sure this is not the end of the announcements. Maybe there'll be some reconfiguration of alliances. We're also conscious that the European Union is looking at the block exemption on those sorts of things. So I think it's fairly safe to say there will be some additional changes. What they're going to be, I think if we could predict that, we would probably have secured a very nice financial position for ourselves, knowing which shares will go up and down, and we'd be back in the Caribbean doing this podcast over a pina colada. But unfortunately, we're not there. But we do obviously have to pay attention to it, because we want to try to be in a good position to make sure that Baltic Hub continues to grow and fulfill the shareholders' expectation and take good care of the workforce here.
Definitely, pina colada sounds fine. Obviously, we are both now working, so after work, definitely yes.
Yes.
Now, yes, safety and security is very important for our industry. Now, looking into 2020, 2021, and 2022, I mean, you know, the shipping lines have been sharing the fantastic results. 2020 was a year of COVID is starting. We don't know what's going to happen. We all freeze the investments. Well, do we need so many vessels? So there was a big freeze in terms of ordering new tonnage. Now, what we've seen in 2021, the first quarter and second quarter, is that there was an exceptionally high level and amount of vessels being ordered that will be afloat most likely, well, as of this year, as it seems. So for the infrastructure that is capable of taking them, I think this is a chance, right?
Yes, when you look absolutely. At it.
Because there are not so many terminals that could take the 24,000 TU vessels, and then with your new investment, what do you think? How many more services can you take on the new terminal? And what is the T3? Because we've heard about this a lot, but can you explain to the audience what is behind the T3 name?
Yes, so T3 Terminal 3 is now under construction. You can probably see some activity if you're on the beach to see some piles going in. And obviously, there's three dredgers working out there. So Budimex, big Polish construction company, together with Dredging International or DEME from Belgium, have the contract with us to deliver that new facility. It's a 36-hectare terminal reclaimed from the sea with a quay frontage of 717 meters. And we'll equip that, obviously, with the state-of-the-art and latest generation of quay cranes, ready to handle 24,000-plus TU vessels, as we have on T2. And this time we will go for semi-automated rail-mounted gantries, which will be a first for us here in Polish ports. So exciting developments, and we'd expect that to start coming online, not, you know, in one total phase, but it start to come online sometime in the latter half of 2024, and then finally completing all of the infrastructure works and the delivery of the equipment by latter half of 2025, I would say, according to the current schedule. So we'll be in a position, depending on the overall MOVE exchange. I mean, today, with MOVE counts of something like 10,000 containers, it's taken us 3 to 3.5 days to operate those vessels. So we've effectively got two windows on the T2 berth. That would be able to duplicate that over on T3 because of the length of the vessels taking up more than a standard berth length, I would say. But who knows what the configurations might be as we go forward. I mean, certainly we would most likely expect to see either Maersk or MSC with a direct call here, perhaps both, Ocean Alliance, and then possibly, I would say, the Alliance as well. So it could be that we do end up with four deep sea Far East Europe services. But we shouldn't discount the possibilities of other trades as well, because obviously Poland's got very strong international trade, import and export. And we're pretty much reliant on the Far East services to be the direct services into Poland these days. And I certainly would like to see, and I know that MSC have started up a transatlantic service that touches Gdynia, but I'm aware that others will perhaps do the same. And if we think back to, you know, your time as well here at Baltic Hub, when you had the Maersk service, then you've seen others have come into the Baltic with mainline services. I think you had G6 here for a while when that alliance was still around. And then obviously some of them evolved into different alliances, and Ocean Alliance ended up staying. So I think that the others will continue to think about and look at how they can deploy transatlantic services, maybe West Coast South American or East Coast South American reefer services into the area. I suppose we have to think about Russia and what the impact of the lack of volume in and out of Russia means as well today. And certainly, if we think that one day Russia will be welcomed back into the international community and the sanctions will disappear, there will be strong cargo flows to and from Russia. And one of the reasons why we decided it was appropriate to change the company name from DCT Gdansk, which obviously had a historic meaning, into Baltic Hub, is because with the third terminal, probably takes us up to something close towards 5 million TEUs worth of capacity and several deep water berths. It means that we really do have the physical characteristics and hopefully the location to be a hub for the Baltics.
5 million, that sounds that Baltic Hub would be one of the largest terminals as a standalone terminals in North Europe range.
Yes. And hopefully one of the busiest, because the 5 million TEU capacity is considerably above the volume of 2022. So we've got a lot of work to do together with our shipping line partners to make sure that we can ramp up the volumes in the future. And I think obviously we're looking at the Polish import-export business as being a very strong part of that. And that has been developing nicely over the last few years. Also, the train connections into the wider hinterland, I suppose specifically longer distance Poland, but then also into Czech Republic and Slovakia. We do already see some traffic to and from Ukraine. And I suspect that that will continue to be the case for a long time into the future, because clearly there's going to be a massive rebuilding program in Ukraine once this terrible war comes to an end, which we hope will be sooner rather than later for obvious reasons. But also good connections into the Baltic, right? So we have seen a change in the patterns because obviously a lot of the Russian transshipments completely disappeared. And that was probably for us something close to 450,000 TEU a year going back to 2021. But what was amazing, I suppose, for us last year, Dominic, was that we managed to close the year on practically the same volume as 2021, despite the loss of those Russian transshipments. And that replacement has come from more import-export cargo and additional volumes to and from the Baltic states and Finland and eastern Sweden. So I think it's very good to show that there is a good geographic location here, that the companies, the shipping lines that we are working with, trust us to do a great job for them, and they can build the connections that they need to serve their customers in those outlying ports.
So what we are seeing is that if I'm hearing you well, is that you see the replacement of the transshipment volumes with the import and export volumes, not only from Poland, as Poland is the economy is doing okay considering circumstances in spite of the high inflationary rates, but still is doing fine. But you are also saying Czech, Slovakia, and other Central East European countries, and Ukraine on top. So that's seems to be the more a more important market for Dystic Gdańsk, right? So you are looking at being a hub for the Central East Europe as a Baltic hub.
Exactly. It is a landside and a seaside hub, I would say. And as you know, we've got pretty capable rail terminal here. We recently signed a contract to take a fourth rail-mounted gantry crane for the rail terminal so we can lift the capacity to something close to 1 million TEUs a year. We must have closed last year close to 650,000, but we haven't released any official statistics on that just yet. But there was strong growth throughout the year, 20% sort of growth on the rail side. And of course, you know, distances and going down to Ukraine are very conducive to rail transportation. We need to find a second location for another rail terminal sometime in the future, because if we look at the statistics and the share of rail and thinking in the future about the continued reduction of CO2 emissions and obviously an electrified rail network that's powered, let's say, by some renewable energy would be very conducive to that, then we think that possibly rail will become 40% of the import-export volume. And I think if we take somewhere like Hamburg, which I know you're increasingly familiar with, as a role model, I think their volumes are something like 50% moving by rail, with a fairly similar geography. So we may even go above 40%. And if that is the case, we must have a second railhead.
I think intermodal is getting importance in all of the major ports at the moment because of all the good reasons. I mean, EU is looking at reducing CO2 emissions. We are also looking into having a more reliable transport when you dispatch a train. Then normally everything arrives on time and in large quantities compared to several 40, 50 trucks that would be on the roads. And there is a good chance that some of them will not arrive on time. Plus, you need to handle 40 or 50 trucks at the same time when they arrive. With a train, it's much easier and definitely much more sustainable. So, what is the share of rail, if you can tell us rail to road share? Because you were saying 40 to 50% in plans, and how it looks like today?
There are times last year when we hit 36%. So I think probably the average over the year would be 34-35%, which is not bad, I have to say. You know, you go to the UK, probably somewhere like Felixstowe, Southampton, they're probably doing something like 38, maybe 40%. Obviously, with a much more mature market as well, and probably more congested roads. We don't have that problem. We've got excellent highways these days in Poland. We have had driver shortages to some extent as well. I suspect that can happen again as e-commerce has pushed so many people into sort of van driving, which tends to be a job that you do fairly close to your home and doesn't mean that you spend the nights away from the family, of course. So there are some advantages to that. But certainly, I think with the push towards greener transportation, and we know companies like Maersk are very, very committed to this. I think Hapag-Lloyd 2 and CMACGM and others will do the same, because it will become so important to their customers as they look into their supply chains and want to publish their green credentials. And we all work towards Fit for, is it 55? We've got a commitment here at Baltic Hub to reduce by 2030 our emissions, and you look into the scope 3 emissions, then you really need to be looking at how many trucks you are handling and what type of trucks they are. Of course, we'll probably move towards electric trucks eventually, but I think there's still a way off in our area of Europe. But the rail transportation is already electrified.
Charles, you said that you are committed to reduce the CO2 emissions in the Baltic Hub. So what kind of projects are you thinking of? What projects have been initiated in order to achieve this goal, which is not far away from now?
Yes. So look, as we grow and develop, all of the yard equipment, so all of the yard cranes will be electric. We've got 10 new RTGs arriving from July to October this year from Konni Cranes, and they are all electrified. The key cranes along the quay are all electrified, and the new ones will be exactly the same. And the new yard will be an electrified yard for electric RMGs. That really just leaves us what we call prime movers, so the tractors that pull the containers to and from the stack to the ship and to the railhead, etc. They're all powered by diesel today. We're looking for alternatives. So one would be, can we use hydrogenated vegetable oil, HVO100? It's not readily available in Poland for commercial sale at the moment. So we're looking at, you know, can we even import that maybe? And that's an ongoing work. And then we've just received 2 Terberg electric prime movers, and there are some Shackman electric prime movers on the way as well. We wanted to test them out in the winter conditions, and until this morning we thought there isn't any winter conditions in Gdansk this year, but I can now see quite a nice carpet of white stuff lying on the ground outside, so it looks like they will get to be tested after all, because one of the challenges that the electric vehicles have is that their capacity can reduce by as much as 25% in very, very cold climates. So let's see how the performance is on that. But I think inevitably we will be moving towards purchasing electric trucks as we go forward. And that will really eliminate the vast majority of the CO2 emissions that we've got.
So Baltic Hub is doing a lot in order to reduce. Shipping lines also claim that they are moving to LNG. They are moving to more sustainable fuels being used. There was also a project of providing the shore to ship electricity. I think it's one of the requirements from Fit for 55 or IMO regulations in future. Is this something that you would foresee in the port of Gdansk as well? I mean, and the Baltic Hub, to be offered to customers?
Yes, I think almost certainly. I think we need to sit down together with the Port Authority and other authorities and the Ministry to decide how can we meet that challenge. What is astonishing is the size of these ships and the number of refrigerated containers that they carry on board will actually consume more electricity than we do operating the terminal and storing the reefer containers that we have on the yard. So that means that we need a much, much larger supply of electrical power to the port, and then the substations to change the voltage sufficiently so that we can plug the vessels alongside. So it's going to be a few years away. I think the target date for IMO is 2030. I'd like to think that it would come earlier than that if we can possibly make it the case, because, of course, if you can do these things faster and eliminate the emissions, then we should certainly try to aim for that. But yes, it's definitely on the agenda. And we do have regular discussions with the shipping lines about the technical requirements and how to go about doing it. It's not done, as you probably know, in many places around the world still today. So it's. I think everybody's on a learning curve to some extent. It does require some significant capital investment, but it's something that everybody has to deal with and to face up. And I hope that we can get it done sooner rather than later.
from what I understood, when I've spoken to professionals who were looking at this, the initial challenge was that there was no standard on how the electricity should be supplied to vessels. Then they come up to an ISO standard, but now I think the energy that is required, as you mentioned, Charles, that has to be supplied to vessel is tremendous. I mean, this is like a small floating city that you would need to plug to your to your electricity grid.
You're absolutely right, and I think, of course, another challenge is, especially for Poland, because we don't have a great deal of renewable energy yet, is there's not so much point to plug in your ships to energy that has been provided by fossil fuels. So the take up from the shipping lines, unless it's obligatory, will not be so great because there's no carbon benefit to it. And they're looking for the carbon benefit as well, because they now have this new IMO 2023 rules, right, where they have the classification of the vessels on their emissions, which means that if they have a certain classification that only allows them, say, to sail an average of 12 knots, then by plugging in for the period of time that they're in the port, they could actually increase that because they're reducing the emissions due to the fact that they're plugging in at port. But it must be electricity that comes from renewable sources as a result. So there's a double push that's required here. And of course, we're familiar with the fact that there are more and more windmills appearing. And we know that there's going to be very, very significant investment in offshore wind power, sorry. And that's just, I think that's coming online from 2026, 2027 onwards. And I suspect that in the same way we've seen around Britain and offshore Denmark and Germany, Holland, etc., that will carry on for many, many years.
Well, wind farms and the supply is something that we've been hearing for the last couple of years. I think there were also rumors about DCT at that point of time, now Baltic Hub being involved in the project. But so far, we have not heard anything from any of the ports or terminals in Poland on the marshalling port. So, well, let's see if the 2026-2027 is achievable. Mm. But that's another thing. But when I hear you saying that the Baltic Hub will be growing to 5 million TEUs, and now is the Ukraine-Russia war, which we all hope will finish soon. The volumes have diverted. Now we see that some of the Ukrainian volumes are coming in. We see that there's some, instability in terms of the growing of the cargoes in Central East Europe in terms of volumes. And also on top, you've been hearing, or at least I've been hearing some time ago, about the central port in Gdansk, and then the outer port in Gdynia, and then the outer port in Świnoujście. I don't know how about you, but I haven't heard a long time about these projects. Does it mean that that Baltic Hub and the T3 dwarfed the other investments, or is this something that would be planning? I mean, are you looking at it from the perspective that there is a certain volume that would need to move via the terminals, and then it's going to be split, or do you think that these will not materialize?
Well, my suggestion was always that we should close down BCT and GCT and move the windmills there, and move the containers across to DCT or Baltic Hub, as we call it now. But I don't think everybody appreciated that genius idea.
I think we would need to ask the CEOs of both terminals whether they would agree with you.
And of course, yes, there are a number of projects on the drawing board, if I can say it like that. I don't want to say horizon, because I think it's very difficult to see exactly what the development timelines of those may be or may not be. From what we can see, there won't be a deep water facility apart from Terminal 3, probably not this side of 2030. I think the ones who seem to be the most ambitious and the most determined to try to develop a facility seem to be Świnoujście. I would say that project in terms of container flows has quite a lot of challenges in terms of breaking into the Polish market, because obviously the Tri-City ports are better located for the main Polish market and down into Warsaw, etc. And of course, all of the road and rail links already exist, which is not the case in Świnoujście. And I think there's quite some opposition on the German side because it's right on the border, as everybody knows. Not so to say that a facility of some type of port might be useful there for a number of things, including offshore wind and the maintenance of those farms in the future. And of course, Świnoujście is not a million miles away from Berlin, an Eastern German geography. So if they can find the investors to go in there, then there's certainly an opportunity to do something there. I haven't seen too much activity in terms of any of the names that we would generally be familiar with, like PSA or Hutchison or DP World, APMT, etc., or any of the shipping line affiliated terminal operators. So it seems that they tend to favor the idea of sticking with the Tri-City ports, which is obviously good news for us, and hence why we're so committed to making these very huge investments that we are. Because if we don't do it, then it will feed those other potential projects to say, hey, someone's got to build some capacity. It's a little chicken and egg story, as is always the case. We have to focus on our business. Obviously, we've made this commitment, and the banks and the shareholders have been very generous with the financing for this because it does have a high price ticket on it, as everything does these days. But the volume over the long term, I'm sure, will be there. You know, these are very, very long term investments, as you know. It's taken us 15 years to get to 2 million TEUs. I suspect that it won't take us another 15 million years to get to another 2 million TEUs, especially if we think that one day Russia will be back in the community again. And it will still have its challenges with ice during the winter and what have you. So we won't see the big vessels directly going up into the northern Baltic. And hopefully we'll see transshipments coming back again and really fulfill that rebranding and renaming of the company that we were bold enough to go ahead with in 2022 and truly call DCT Gdansk Baltic Hub.
So looking at the shorter perspective of 2023, what would you say? I mean, what's your expectation in terms of volumes and market development?
Well, I think the fourth quarter of last year was quite alarming in some ways, because we certainly saw a very swift falling off of volumes when we compared that to the averages that call sizes that we were seeing for the first 9 months of the year, even taking into consideration the end of the Russian transshipments following the invasion. What has been, again, slightly surprising, but in a positive way, is the start that we're having to the year. So I think probably in January, we closed around about 165,000 TEU, which is not a bad performance for January. If we take in, you know, seasonality and what we're seeing coming out from Asia, and our colleagues that we speak to over there, then it does look like it's going to be a reasonable year. Not a year of growth, but not a year of decline, which we feared perhaps as we were closing out of the year. Obviously, the COVID situation in China has changed dramatically, and they seem to have now taken the more sort of European or rest of the world approach to allow people to become infected and get that sort of tolerance there. And hopefully that will mean that there'll be less factory and port closures than we've seen over the last 2 years in relation to that. But obviously we do have an inflationary issue around Europe, and Poland's no exception. It's very high here. So let's see. Some of those elements may lead to more offshoring towards Poland, I think. So I think we might see an increase in production in some of the Polish factories for some of the big manufacturers. So I'm confident that we will close somewhere close to the volumes of last year, even without those Russian transshipments, which I think is not a bad result considering the tumultuous world that we live in sometimes.
Well, we all keep our fingers crossed for the maritime business in Poland and definitely for development of the Baltic Hub.
Thank you.
Well, I think with this, I would say, positive outlook, I would very much like to thank you for this discussion. Charles, it was a pleasure as usual to talk to you. And well,
Thanks for inviting me.
We will be definitely looking forward to see the new phases of Baltic Hub development. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I can't say I'm a regular listener to the show because you didn't ask me how my Polish is doing, which was very kind of you, but it's no better than the last time we discussed this. But I do have great feedback from many of my colleagues, including our shareholders. So congratulations on a great job on that, Dominik.
Thank you very much. We will test the Polish during the next episode, maybe with ITFM.
Thanks, and all the best to you and everybody at ITER FM for 2023, if it's not too late.
Thank you.
Możemy nagrywać ten podcast dzięki wsparciu partnerów i sponsorów.
Pierwszym z nich jest Balticon, wiodący przewozik kontenerowy, realizujący zlecenia dla najlepszych armatorów morskich i spedytorów. Balticon dysponuje również własnymi depotami, na których serwisuje specjalistyczne zabudowy kontenerowe oraz prowadzi ich wynajem, a ich specjalnością są reefery.
A od samego początku, jak tworzymy, nasz podcast wspiera DCT Gdańsk, największy terminal kontenerowy na Bałtyku i prawie równie długo czołowy kolouder morskich ładunków drobnicowych firma EQ Worldwide. Jeżeli jesteście spedytorem, jeszcze nie wozicie drobnicy, to dobrze się skontaktować z EQ, bo łatwiej z nimi wystartować. A jeśli chcecie do nas dołączyć, podzielić się swoją wiedzą, poprowadzić któryś odcinek, dać wywiad, cóż wam tam w duszy gra, to śmiało do nas piszcie na kontakt@eta.fm lub po prostu nagrajcie to, o co chcecie zapytać, tak że będziemy mogli to załączyć do któregoś z odcinków na anchor.fm/eta.fm.